this stat and he's not clearly agreed by tomorrow on this bill. But will be guided by the views of the various parties to propose thoughts on the matter. So with those few introductory comments, I'd like to open the meeting and throw it open for discussion.
Simple, can we, because we just got this amendment from the DA, can we pass out and just to take us through so it just starts to make sense and the motivation around it? It will be quite helpful.
Yes. Yeah.
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 No, sir, I have an impression that we were going to reflect on the previous discussions we had. Safe to say that the issue that we had the submissions of CFRSIDC around amendments, the proposal we make around Section 13 of the Act. And secondly, there was an issue that related to three things. One was the issue of the removal of the member, number 2, and the issue of the dissolution of the board. And lastly, there was a matter relating to the interim period. What does the committee propose that must happen with the interim board? So I thought that's the way that we should at least be going. I don't say we shouldn't entertain what the DA says, but at least it would be better that we go on a particular chronological order. Thank you.
So would you... You mind holding on then when we come to Section 15, then we can consider your proposal. Although I do see you've got something on Section 13, is that right? New proposal, Section 13, also Ms. Smart, and then Section 14 and Section 16 also. So, Mr. Kumalo?
We can entertain the
13.
The 13, their proposal, and then from there will come, as I'm saying, in accordance to the proposal that you made last week. Thank you.
Fine. I'm going to talk to you on 13.
My position remains unchanged on the unconstitutionality of Clause 3. I remain opposed to 2C, which I find offensive, and 4 falls away once 3 is deleted. But the new ones are just where, flowing from our discussions the other day and from the public submissions, I thought that what one could usefully take on board is the proposal by the coalition that written justification should be done by the selecting committee. Now, they propose of all of the nominees, which I think is not appropriate. And I've made a recommendation because I think there is merit in the idea of written justification. It will militate against pressure and other forms of undue influence. I propose that a written evaluation of the persons recommended, in other words, the final 12 board members that we choose under the normal appointment procedure, that we write an evaluation of these people viewed collectively, because that is how you appoint a board. You look at the range of skills and choose candidates who most completely fulfill the range of skills, and that be part of our report to the National Assembly. Now, in my view, one doesn't every day put every single thing like this into the law. But I think there is some merit. Whatever we do, we already do absolutely perfectly. And therefore, I thought the rest of their proposals had no particular merit. We already do conduct our business publicly. But I thought a written evaluation of the actual people chosen had some merit. And then I thought, well, if we are going to entertain Section 13, this is perhaps a good opportunity simply to delete something that ought to have been deleted before. Section 13.4, you know, is the list of skills and qualifications that we must try to reflect in the board. You will recall that the coalition proposed a tiny board of persons with skills which are remarkably close to those reflected in the coalition itself. But I'm not looking at their proposal. Their proposed interim board members were identifiably a member of CASATU, a member of the FXI, and an academic lawyer from their rank. So I'm not entertaining that seriously. There's a certain measure of self-interest in that proposal. What I'm saying is this is an opportunity to do what we should have done in 2002, and that is to delete the requirement for someone with skills in strategic planning the SABC does not do frequency planning. You can't set up frequency planning. So this is just a housekeeping proposal. Would you like me to go to 14?
No, it's all there.
Thank you. Chair, Ms. Smart is commenting on the section 13.2, which actually it says that in the process of the interviews, once we've got a list, short list of candidates, the process, the proposal from the coalition, as well, the process must be public, open, no, must be open to the public, that the written evaluation of every nominee is published, including electronically, by the relevant portfolio committee, taking into account the objectives and the principles of the ECNA. She's proposing that what we should then do in the same area, that the same section number D, that a written evaluation of the persons recommended views collectively is presented to the National Assembly. We have said, Chairperson, that the individuals, when they submit their CV, curriculum vitae, to the portfolio committee, also that they are interviewed publicly. Their CVs then will be submitted to the secretary, in which in an event that there's a request to get them, they will be given. And the difficulty is that once you make a joint evaluation of the nominees collectively, it becomes a bit of a problem. I'm not sure how you do that. You could only do that on the basis of the qualifications as outlined. And I think, Chair, where we would agree, obviously, it is the issue of removal of the frequency planning. It is not relevant to the broadcasting environment for now. It's something that will be more on a different scale, like your telecoms and stuff like that, and other areas, like your radio, whatever, like those type of things. No, not on radio. I think that is something that we could look into. It's something that I'm sure the ANC wouldn't have a problem to do that. It would say maybe we could delete that. But where we are having a problem, it is a written evaluation of the persons recommended. Now, I'm not so sure, Ms. Marks, who is supposed to write this evaluation? Chairperson. You see? Because this individual, Chair, come in as individuals. Now, if you have to make a collective evaluation and submit that, and I'm not so sure, it's something that, as we did discuss last time, we're not so sure whether we are for that idea. But that's the matter, Chairperson, around it.
For one thing, for example, not all parties agree on absolutely every candidate, and therefore one would have to provide also for a minority report in the same report department. This is not an issue of principle. I just thought it was a proposal from that coalition that had real merit, because if you have to write why you are nominating people to the National Assembly, if you have to write, then that, I think, might just quite effectively militate against improper influence from various quarters.
So isn't that a submission from civil society, coalition? It's more to do if you don't have a public participatory process. It's where you do it outside, but, you know, because the process from the offset is open to the public. You start to repeat yourself by wanting to give a report. Remember, people it's an open process. The public broadcaster is broadcasting it on radio. You know, it's an open process. So it does not have any real meaning or objective by writing a report and publish that report. Because people are free to attend and participate in that, all of that. So I don't think that's a good proposal coming from them. It's the same when they've asked that the press should be open to the public. Of course it is.
Look, Chair, I mean, I hear everybody, but I've got a slightly different viewpoint in that the law states that we're required to select people with certain skills, minus the frequency planning. As we all know, during the process late last year, there was a constituency named in law that was not included. So I understand the argument of whether that this should not be seen as a motivation versus demotivation in terms of the persons nominated. But I do think there is merit in putting forward that the following persons have been recommended to the National Assembly for the following reasons. Ms. X, technology. Mr. Y, X, in terms of law. So we show that we have applied our minds to what the law requires, and therefore Ms. X, Mr. Y, and so on and so forth in terms of the following categories as required in law. So it doesn't have to be a motivation in terms of any large, you know, thing about their interviews, but these are the terms of the law. This is why we have chosen the following person for the following.
Even for purpose of those who might have not been here last week, the Save for SIPC coalition, they are proposing that every nominee, there must be a written evaluation about every nominee that's now. Ms. Mans of the opinion that maybe that's not right, but now she thinks, you know, it could make sense for a collective, you know, evaluation of the members. Now Ms. Fox says maybe you could also consider to leave frequency spending. Now, one of the things that they've agreed to was that we would leave the qualifications of the nominees as it is in the act. Because the so far SABC coalition are proposing only four criteria or four areas in which they thought nominees must have. One, it was an issue that related to corporate governance, finance, journalism and broadcasting. That's what they're proposing. Now we said no, actually we are more comfortable with the types of qualifications in terms of labor, this and that and many others. But then there's a person of trying to include other things like maybe reverting back to your frequency planning and other things. You must also be sensitive to the background of which we come from. You might want to make a proposal, and the ANC might also make a proposal, and actually, we think that we must include other things. A board member or nominee must have a master's in Ubuntu, or a bachelor of science in guerrilla warfare, or a diploma in hunting, or any other skill. And it could actually be exclusionary because some people might have not been able to be in any places where they could have had such training. Now, when you do this type of qualifications and skills that you include, you are likely to exclude a lot of people in which you might then have designated groups only being given this because you might have few people trained in frequency planning in your historically marginalized constituency. So that becomes a problem. So that's why we thought that the manner how the qualifications are much broader and they are much better. Even dropping the frequency planning itself is just a matter of fact that it's not relevant to broadcasting. However, we would not have a problem to still leave it there as part of the broad range of other qualifications. So we are fine with that. We just thought that in that area we could be flexible about frequency planning on the basis of its own location because it's not relevant. But we would not want this type of situation where you want to have a individual nominee to say this one does not qualify on the basis that he does not have a master's degree in telecommunications, or he does not have a LLM or a LLD in terms of corporate governance as it relates to broadcasting, so therefore you're excluded. So we wouldn't want that type of situation. Hence we were more comfortable about the way the process goes and how we have been doing things before, where we call people nominate individuals of good standing. They get nominated, they come, we shortlist them, we interview. After interviewed, they perform in the public, everybody seeing them. After that, from there, we submit the names and recommend. Now, we do compile a report, you know, et cetera, as we normally do, to the speaker, in terms of where the people, their CVs are there. But to now make an evaluation on the collective, it becomes cumbersome. It becomes extremely a bit difficult, Chairperson. Thanks. I think that we would really not want that evaluation to go there. We would have a separate process where you can evaluate it. Secondly, how do you evaluate people who just came together as a group not knowing each other, and based on your own assessment of the individual skills and qualifications that you think that they might be or they might not be good to be in the board. So it becomes a bit difficult. You know, sometimes we thought we've got the best board, you know, we selected them, and I can tell you the court cases they've been going through, up and down, some we can see that we're having problems as a collective. As individuals, they could be good, but as a collective, I'm not so sure. Thank you.
Yeah, you were getting tendentious just towards the end there, huh? Let me just say, look, I mean, when we get to that absolutely formal stage, which today's meeting I thought was the formal stage, you'll notice this. I will move that, and you will vote as you will have thought in the meantime, if appropriate. But I think there is some merit in the way I've proposed the written evaluation. Let me just say one thing. That section with the skills and qualifications under which we appoint, it's not a tick-off list. It never has been a tick-off list. It says the members of the board must, when viewed collectively. And it doesn't mean you must find the frequency planner, find the broadcast regulation person. I mean, we apply our minds and we put together as a group of people which is going to best work. I mean, it's not a tick-off list, and I think it would be... never has been, and I think it would be wrong to approach it like that, because you might find one really strong candidate which gives you both the broadcast regulation and the media law, and you're happy that person is so strong that's taken care of, and it gives you more scope, for example, to do who are good on technology. And, you know, this is a modern broadcaster has to compete against many others. I mean, that was what was so poor about the list from the coalition. The idea that you can run a corporation like the SABC with governance, finance, journalism, and broadcasting, I think it doesn't remotely meet the requirements. The technology and so forth are important. But so what I'm saying is I will move that provision when we get there. This is not a matter of great principle. And you will respond as you see.
Yeah, but yeah, I think for me, maybe the lawyers will help us. The word evaluation implies a report of strength and weakness. When you evaluate something, you have to look at that's not maybe what you intend. Maybe if the issue is a written report on the person. Because normally what we do is we publish in the ATC the list of names. And that's in dry form. I know for our own caucus, I have to go, and the committee has to go, the study group has to go and say, these are the 12 names, so and so and so and so, these are the reasons why we chose it. Because people don't know who is Mr. X or Ms. Y, etc. It's just a name. And the same applies to the gender commission, all the other bodies. So if we're talking about a written report which does define, in a sense it's a report on why this committee has selected 12 names. That's really what we might be talking about. Because evaluation is a bit of a problem, because then you have to talk about strengths and weaknesses, negatives and positives. All right. With that in mind, I mean, different parties will decide whether they want to support that concept. But if we understand each other, then it will be easier for us to consider the proposal. Okay, can we move off the side? We are agreeing at this stage that frequency planning we will delete. We don't have to belabor that one. Okay. Any other proposals on section 13, Mr. Kumaro?
Thank you, Chair. You would know that section 13 deals extensively with the power, the act confers the power of authority to appoint the 12 non-executive members of the board to the president on advice of the National Assembly. Now, Chair, in that, you would realize that also it would have an impact. You see, while we deal with the issue of removal on Section 15, it also implies that we have to deal with the appointing authority in terms of that, and also that deals with the chairperson and the deputy chairperson. Chair, we would have wanted us to look into that also. That's one of the issues. But in terms of the appointing authority, in terms of the people appointed there, it's something that I thought we wanted to deal with Chairperson. It is much more on the principles of judicial interpretation, Chairperson, about that issue. That when you do the appointment of the people in terms of what this says, it does have an implication for a removal. You see, so we thought it would be important for us to look into amending part of the section, and I'm going to give Eric to just deal with one or two of the proposals that we think should be considered as we consider the amendment around section 13. But it goes also with the chairperson and the deputy chairperson to say whether the president of the National Assembly should do the appointment of the chairperson and deputy chairperson, or should you rather leave that to the board itself, in which the board can recommend who becomes the chairperson. And that chairperson could either appoint the deputy chairperson, or the board could also agree on the deputy and the chair, because chairperson, you would rather sometimes, when the chairperson is appointed by the president, they look upon themselves a bit superior compared to their peers, but two, also they see themselves more accountable to the president compared to the board itself. And that sometimes creates problems in terms of corporate governance. Of lately, if you see the way boards are appointed, you appoint a board, and then they themselves agree who will become chairperson. You might select the last bad person in the queue in the board, and it starts a serious problem. Because that board might not recognize that chairperson or undermine or give that chairperson to write some funny stuff and publish it in the media, then tomorrow that chairperson is in trouble, comrade chairperson.
I'm just making some examples.
So I'm saying that's one of the issues that we're proposing, that we should then look at that. So that the president or the appointing authority does appoint the board, and the board will then decide on the chair.
I'm sure
I agree with the issues raised by the Honorable Member Kumar. You see, Chair, what we wanted to do last week, on our last meeting, we said we don't want to rush to deal with this amendment. We want to consider as far as possible different views on how should we handle this matter. And that is what we are still doing even today. Hence, we didn't see it possible to finalize this process today and so on. But if you look on Section 13, what we are thinking about is what already has been indicated. A situation where we might have the National Assembly or Parliament playing more roles in terms of the appointment, and also which will have impact in terms of the removal. What we are in relation to that say is that you see, we were asking ourselves a lot of questions to say, but is this supposed to be the National Assembly and the President who engage on this process? Can we give the speaker some role on the process and so on? But we are just throwing those things, which I think that maybe tomorrow when we come back will be more clear on what we want to do. But I was hoping, Chair, that the party today, like the DS, and they'll also come with something which we must still consider before we can say this is our final position and so on. The other issue, Chair, around 13 is that for a strange reason, there is no provision for resignation. There is the assumption that you appoint the board, you don't resign for 5 years. So we want to look into that, Chair, whether we can draw in a provision for resignation, which allows people to resign, of course, with a reasonable time frame, to allow us to be able to get other people who can come in and do the work and so on. The other issue, Chair, in relation to the other matters raised here, is that we still feel strong that about the section which the DA has indicated that we must delete. But as strong as we feel about those, we think that something which will be saying we must work towards something can be considered. But we won't accept just to delete without anything which replaces that. We want to say, if you say Section 2C or Section 3 or 4 must be deleted, but what is your view in terms of how to handle those issues and so on? We are doing that in the back of our mind in the current situation, because in 1999, when the legislation was passed, the current situation was not foreseen. So we're trying to preempt whatever the situation which we can be faced with in the future and so on, so that at least we make sure that it also covers everyone else and so on. Lastly, Chair, we might like also to check where possible. As I'm saying, Chair, because you see we're dealing with these issues broadly for now. I'm sure that we are very soon we'll be starting to concretize what we want to present, especially when we sit for the formal consideration and so on. The issue, Chair, is that whether the condition which we have put, Chair, in terms of in which circumstances can you remove a member, can they be practically be applicable in the issue of the when you want to dissolve the board and so on. Or maybe we need to separate what can constitute the individual removal and what can constitute the dissolvement of the board and so on. But we are doing that, taking consideration the submission for DA continuously they've been saying this cannot happen and so on. So we're just also trying to look into that. But I was just hoping that they might come with something substantive which we can consider as we try to finalize our position. The IFP, when we talk at one point, they're indicating that they might love to have some input in other areas. I'm sure those things, they will still be coming here so that we can consider and then we break the barrier that we push things down the throat of people so that it becomes a more inclusive and consultative process. That's what we want to do. But, Chair, that will depend whether are we assisted to do that. If we are not assisted, Chair, then we will carry on. Believe me not, we are ready to carry on, but we need to ensure that we are amendable. If people present things, we can consider those and so on. I think, Chair, those are the issues which we are throwing around, which we are thinking of. But, like I'm saying, we come with concrete proposal around those particular matters. Thanks.
Just to add, Chair, that we are also considering a situation where actually you need to allow the appointing authority not only to be the President of the Republic, if it's possible, to check if the Speaker of the National Assembly can also play that role. But two, that will then make sure, that will then force you to gather this assembled majority of the two houses to make to approve such a situation. So I would want to say if it's possible to maybe check the state law advisor whether that does this border on the issue or does this assist us in the issue of the separation of power. Chairperson, we are saying that so that in a situation that we propose either for removal or for dissolution of appointment of the interim board, the Speaker of the National Assembly should be able to play a role. So therefore we are proposing, which will then come later with a proper written drafted thing that we would want to see the Speaker of the National Assembly also playing a role in the appointment, in particular of the interim board or any other such thing. The reason is that once you deal with the removal on section 15, it consequently have got implications for section 13. So therefore, whatever proposal you come with, they will still have to be subjected to that. So therefore, that's the thing that we would also want to deal with, Shepherd. We're not gonna be taking the powers of anybody, anything. We just want to make sure that the Parliament in particular got a major role to play. You would understand, Chair, that we're trying to correct a defect in the law, a lacuna, that's actually been created by a situation where you can't remove a member of the board or member in any event of any wrongdoing because the act does not allow you to do that. Nor the president nor the assembly can do that. So we want from our part to have us, or the Speaker, even the President, also the level of appointing authority. Thanks, Chairperson.
Let me just understand this. At the moment, the only role that Parliament plays is in the advertising, selection, the interviewing, and the recommendation. And it's the 12 names that are given. We said on Thursday that the President is got very little discretion because if there's no basis to object to those names, he has to appoint those names. That's the role of Parliament. what you are proposing now is that you want a mechanism, a legal mechanism, by which after the parliamentary process is completed, before the final appointment by the president, there must be some role for the speaker. Is that what you are proposing?
No, sir. What I'm saying is, I'm saying we need to find a way in which the appointing authority is not only left to the President of the Republic, but where the Speaker plays a role. Now, when that determination will be done on the basis of the various areas that we will deal with at a later stage, in terms of removal or resolution of an interim period. Because we understand that currently the system is such that after recommendation of the National Assembly, the President would appoint. Now, we are proposing that we should be given a chance to look, to draft something in which we'll table, in which we see, we also must see a role for the Speaker. You see, it's a pity, sir, that if you had a Speaker of Parliament, within the Parliament, you've got a Speaker of the National Assembly and a Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, in which then, if you make the Speaker an appointing authority, it must then be agreed or at least have been endorsed by the two houses. And for that, we need a particular majority to do that. Hence, I'm saying we're going to work it out. And once we've done it, we will so that the Speaker also plays a role in that particular issue. But our proposal will be much more around the second part of our presentation. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I tried to follow more or less. I must tell you, I'm very nervous when the ANC starts to be reasonable, and it seems they're really looking for solutions. When I left this committee last time, they were sort of pushing it through the front. So, Eric, I'm not sure what happened. Therefore, I'm nervous. The question was just like, I try to understand the speaker's role. Are there any precedents where the speaker plays a sort of executive role? Because that's what I hear. I'm not sure if that is, because that will help me to understand what they're trying to go for. I would like to be reasonable as well, and I like Eric's attitude, but to help me on that one.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, the reason why the President appoints all of the independent bodies is that the one thing we lack, we are the legislative authority of this country. We have no executive power or function. We can't appoint a person to office. And that is why the President, in the case of this body and all of the Chapter 9s and many others, signs on the dotted line. That's what it means. We choose. Parliament selects. We recommend to the House votes, and that's it. The choice has been done. It goes to the President because that is the executive of this country. And I don't think what the ANC is contemplating is achievable. Whether they want to give the Speaker a kind of a titular head of Parliament and almost a courtesy of, she can choose the Chairman and Deputy Chairperson of the Board, I would think not really appropriate. A Speaker is by definition the person chosen by Parliament to preside and to, in a neutral way, and to conduct its affairs. She is not a person with any supposed political discretion in her own right. So I think that's very problematic. I would, however, like to support the other proposal, that the board should choose its chair from amongst its own members. That is a healthy mechanism. You'll find that in the Chapter 9 review, that's something we strongly recommended as an option for all of the independent institutions. It just means that you have a case then where a board expresses its confidence in a certain person. So you have a board being led by someone in whom it had confidence. And I think that would be a very good substitute for the existing 13-3, the President's designation of the chair, which was, I think, a kind of a courtesy, kind of a traditional courtesy. But the long and the short of it is that Parliament chooses these people, absolutely nobody else. And then if you want to take the courtesy away from the President, I would go along with that. But then I would say, either we, the MPs, then select the chair and the deputy chair, And ideally, of course, the same people who interviewed so we can know their work. Either we choose them, or we allow the board to choose their own leader. Is one now allowed to respond to the several other points the ANC writes?
Sure.
The question of resignation, do you need that formally in the law, or does it stand to reason under labour and other statutes? The law advises simply less maybe, but there's nothing wrong in putting in a resignation provision. Does the ANC look at all at the cycle of SABC board appointments, which just for historic reasons happen to coincide with the elections, the electoral cycle? You might want to think about whether boards should be appointed for 5 years or whether we should make that four, just to break that coincidence. And presumably I'm required to respond to Eric, who touched on my proposal to delete certain things and whether there's any way of finding something that everybody would be happy with. And may I just regretfully say no. My proposal is what is in the first part of this amending bill, which is that Parliament must have a role in removing members of the board after due inquiry if such a situation arises. That just means that we bring the removal provision in line with the appointment provision, which is straight from Chapter 9. And the present position is, of course, not, as many of our print media people tend to report, that the President can remove them. He cannot. The present situation is that the board itself must trigger a due inquiry into a member. And after that due inquiry, the President can remove. And we are saying Parliament ought to have a role, and we are talking only about single members who have made themselves guilty of misconduct or are incompetent or are incapacitated in some way. These things can never, never happen without grounds. A person has to have done something wrong or to be absolutely unable to do their job before you even start an inquiry. You have to be in a position to formulate a complaint or a charge. And so our proposal goes only as far as that, and we're very happy to see the first clause in this amending provision, which will give Parliament a role in the removal, and in fact a decisive role in the removal of a member if such a person misconducts themselves. Beyond that, I absolutely cannot see any opportunity, Eric, for ameliorating the other provisions. Clause 3, which provides for the President appointing directly an interim board, is simply unconstitutional because the SABC is founded on free speech and media freedom. And the independence from government, independence means independence from government, is written into its statute. And the whole scheme and structure of the corporation, as given effecting its statute, is for its independence, and therefore you cannot have the executive directly appointing. So I see no hope of that being changed. And the proposal was made that if we adopted the normal appointment process and put it back in the hands of the legislature, then yes, of course, the constitutional problem falls away. But it is, to me, an absolutely pointless proposal, because that is not, in fact, what would happen. You see, that proposal that you sit down and you now appoint an interim board rests entirely on the proposition that the entire SABC sitting board will be dissolved. Now, that proposition in itself is offensive. It is offensive to the independence of duly appointed people, which is why my deletions commence at clause 2C. You do not hold out a proposition of mass sacking and dissolution against a duly appointed body of people without becoming intimidatory and without threatening their security of tenure. So to me, that is not something I would even begin to entertain. And once you accept that you will not be dissolving the whole board, then there is also no case for an interim board. And I think, you know, you can't dissolve a whole board. You will have to lodge complaints or charges one by one against the sitting members. Go formulate them. And then you start the due inquiry one by one against 12 people. with due process built in. Due process is not what the Communist Party said to us in its position. Public participation. Their view is presumably mass mobilization.
Just on a procedural point, I might be lost. We were on Section 13. Are we done? Because she is now on Section 15. Give us a chance to make a presentation before she's responding on things that we still have to deal with.
Alright, let's try and limit ourselves to 13.
Yes,
we're coming to 15.
Yeah, no, I have in fact gone. Yes. No, but Eric put specific questions to me. Specific ones. And it was with your agreement that I answered them.
Okay.
Mr. Khumalo indicated that we are not trying to encroach to any body's authority or power. I'm sure we are all clear the distinct role between ourselves and the executive. We are not intending to try to encroach to any of that. That's what you are saying. So it can be correct that we want to do that. But you see, sometimes it becomes very difficult. Because when I was saying this thing, I said, we are throwing those ideas. For argument's sake, what would be unconstitutional about, I'm just making an example, that the president must appoint in consultation with the speaker. What becomes the unconstitutional? I'm just throwing one example. Because you see, it does not take away the appointment part from the president, but if the exercise that is made in consultation with someone else, whether it's our service parliament or it's the speaker and so on and so on. But the only thing which changes, it might change that you see currently. What it means is that we only advise ourselves, our own advisory capacity. So if we go through the process and we make the submission to the president, if it does not see his way to appoint, he might not appoint and draw back everything to us. It's not given that when we submit, it will be approval, it's going to appoint and so on. He can send it back to us and so on. Because we are acting as an advisory body to him, submitting those names and so on. So, that's what we are looking at. But it was not intention to encroach to the executive powers and so on. But the other thing which
I'm looking at the law here. The 12 non-executive members of the board must be appointed by the president on the advice of the National Assembly. So I don't understand what you're talking about us just really being an advisory role. Because I just like the law advisors, or just so we can pin down, and also the role of the speaker. Are you suggesting then that that we report to the speaker and then the president and the speaker get together? Because the law as I read it, it's certainly we are much more than advisory role with the word must.
All right, let Mr. Kulwani finish, and then we'll ask the state law advisors to come in at some point.
The question to respond on that, the question is, does that it mean that the president is forced to appoint? That's what it means. I'm just asking, well, that's what you are betting. I'm saying the president, if he does not see his way, can send that to us to reconsider. I'm just saying, does that mean, Chair, that if we give the 12 names, let's say for argument's sake, Chair, Mr. Khumalo used to say sometimes we recommend 12 people, the other one is not a South African. But we don't have the necessary capacity ourselves to vet that person. But somewhere else that is done, then it's discovered at the point when the names are there. That's what I'm saying, Chair. That's what he used to talk about. To say, sometimes we can recommend Mr. Peters will always say, you know what, straight jacketing the president to say this is the 12th and so on, there's no room. And so, but I'm just saying, does it mean that the president cannot send back those recommendations or that advice which you are giving to us back if it does not seem to way to appoint those particular people? That's how the chair can respond to the question. Does that mean that?
I can understand the debate and the feeling, Sean Morley, but it's so difficult to get through the fog. Because I know, if I listen correctly to the ANC, that the procedure that you use to appoint in the end will also be something to remove. And hearing the speaker all the time, I'm not exactly sure what they mean. Meaning in this sense, as far as we're concerned, the speaker, the present speaker, is parliament. And therefore we say she's got a neutral role, a symbolic role. If they mean acting on behalf of the assembly after the advice, that makes sense. But I get the impression that she'll be acting on her own, making a decision on her own, maybe on appointment and removal. And I don't understand that. From my point of view, SABC board is almost chapter 9 type of body, in the sense of independence with a lot of power in South Africa, and cannot be a political playing ball at the end of the day. And I always argued with license payers because they are very angry. Because they believe, and I said it last time, they pay a license. They don't see it as a tax. They say, I'm forced by law of this parliament to pay a license. I pay a license, now I want to buy services, and I don't like what I see. I've got no control over that. Then I argue and say, no, sir, you've got control because the National Assembly that you elect are appointing the board, and that's your indirect way of having control. I don't know if my argument is sound, but it's an argument that you can get by with. The only way you can argue is while it's being forced. Remember, they must pay a license whether you're looking at SABC or not. They must still pay. Now, if the speaker is on her own, that argument falls through. And that's why I'm not sure about where are we going with this. Are we going to a position where the speaker will remove them in the end on her own and be out of the first place? I'm not sure that is the end of the argument.
Maybe to go directly. I mean, what you know about the speaker. See, a speaker is not someone. So it's what you know about the speaker. That speaker is part of parliament. So it's not an independent person, somewhere that is decided on and so on and so on. So I think we are correct on that one. If you misunderstood, I'm not talking a speaker as an individual, I'm talking a speaker in the context with the other people.
Mr.
Kumar,
that means
on
advice of us, that's what I understand.
Yeah, on the advice of the National Assembly, of the committee.
Once Ms. Smart has been given a chance to speak on so many issues that she did, it now makes us to go back to the proposal, Chairperson, Section 13, Amendment to Proposal 1, that is the Chairperson and the Deputy Chairperson of the Board must be appointed by the Board. 2, we propose that there must be an insertion of a resignation aspect because the Act does not cover that. 3, we are saying the top part of the Section 13 will tell you that Parliament confers the power to the President to appoint 11 non-executive committees. We are now saying we want to find a way in which the appointing authority should not just be the President of the Republic, but also the Speaker of the National Assembly to play a role in that. Now, we are saying we will explain it as I would deal with the issue of removal and the dissolution and also the issue of the interim. Now, these are the proposals that we are making in relation to this particular Section 13. Now, sir, immediately once we move to Ms. Yengen, we also deal with some of the issues as related to the role of the speaker, because we also agree with Mr. Smart, the speaker is impartial, is neutral, the office is highly respected. In an event of death or resignation of the president of the country, the speaker will become acting president. So for all the reasons, that's why we want the speaker to be part of it. All those good reasons, Ms. Smart, I must tell you, for the first time, I agree with the DAU, I've been so good. But my only problem is that my party, once
just
I
watch the trap behind it.
once I agree with the DA, then I must be with my politics, and my ANC comrades will forgive me, but I think she's right on that particular. So we are saying, on the basis of what everything that you say, the speaker is also giving the power, but that does not undermine the role of parliament, of the National Assembly. You see, the contradiction comes to a situation where the National Assembly recommends the name to the president. Section 15B. Now, Section 15B then says the president must act on the recommendation of the National Assembly. Now, it is that must and the recommendation that creates a problem, because once you make a recommendation, somebody can act and might not act on it, because it's just a recommendation. It's not enforceable by local. Like, it's not like you say, you now once we've got masks and we've got a recommendation, that's where we think the problem is now. That's why we think it is there that you might then want to bring the role of Arab, where the president doing consultation with the speaker either way. Now that's why we're saying we would have to talk to the state Lord Master to give us, and then so that we do it properly. But I must also point out, Ms. Mark, to ask a question to say, is there a precedent for it? Mr. Miller, where in the country that you might have a situation where you abrogate the responsibilities of either president to the speaker, and this in relation to chapter 9, you are saying that we'll have to see if there's anything unconstitutional about it, you know? But two things. There are three models in the world that we looked into: the Canadian model, the Korean, and Australian model. In Australia, in Korea, in a situation where there's a dissolution of the
it can be south.
You know, in the North Korea, you know, it's the Communist Party. So you shouldn't not tell you for just to make sure that you don't worry, it is the South. It is intended for your health purpose, don't worry, it is the North. So I'm saying, in Korea, you've got a situation where, in an event of a dissolution or something, the speaker appoints the interim board. You see, the interim board in that process, and at a particular point in time, while that process has been done, it is then that the National Assembly will recommend the name for a new board that will be appointed by the president. That's the first instance. The second instance is a situation in Canada where the National Assembly takes responsibility in the case of removal of a decision that they themselves do the process. Now, people might say that we're acting as a reverse in terms of us appointing, dissolving, putting a new interim committee, recommending again, so those type of things. But where the president might say you're playing referee and play at the same time. Now that's the concern, but this is the examples we have had, and we think that they could be workable. You see, because here we've got a dilemma, Ms. Ford, where you've got a board that cannot just be removed by the president of the republic or by the National Assembly, and therefore we're looking into them. So the proposal we're making in relation to removal states, the recommendations we think we must also include is as it relates to the dissolution of the board. Ms. Mark could be quite right that you might not have a situation where the board acts, all of them, in terms of misconduct, or they did not declare an interest, because it could be an individual or two individuals. It might not be a group. There should be compelling reasons why it should be a group. You know, Ms. Mark, it could be a compelling reason when you've got a board that decide to say that they will not resolve any matter as far as their concern in trying to deal with the issues properly with management. They will prefer to use the money of the board to the court, and all of them agree that the court will be the only place where they would actually find solutions. And that board is just collective of the that becomes a problem. You can have a situation where the board decide to leak a confidential memo about this manager and everything so damaging that no one will take responsibility, and the board says, no, we're fine, nobody is guilty, then obviously that must be a compelling reason for us to think, how do we deal with this board? There could be a number of reasons, and I'm sure some of them are said, but what we are saying we would have to at least clarify or add on the five reasons, add more of those issues that could make us to dissolve a board, which is basically a worst case scenario, and that is what we'll bring back as we discuss it in cage. Adding more of the things. We have also identified the weaknesses in terms of those type of areas. That's what we're going to correct. So basically that's the same. Then we are saying finally, as it relates to the interim board process, which is the matter that we've been discussing, we are saying that it is also in that instance of where you look in section 13 to go in tandem with section 15 that also the speaker will play a role with the president in relation to the appointment. And the view would have been that the speaker, as the Korean model suggests, the speaker should be given the power to appoint the interim board when it has been dissolved. And for a duration of 3 or 6 months, in which after that you start to kick in the process of advertising, nomination, stuff like that, and after that you appoint. So basically, that's the proposal that we are making to the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Clarification. I want the state law advisors to come in with a view on some of these
things. I can just clarify quickly, Chair. I'm saying, Chair, when you see, the point that I sent to Ms. Pratt, that once you deal with the remover, let's say, for instance, you want to dissolve the board, and after dissolving the board, you give to the president. You've given the president, by the way, the name to appoint to the board. On the 1st of January, then you say, no, this board is bad, it must be dissolved. You want a new board, then you say, okay. As a matter of fact, we're giving you 5 non-executive board members together with the 3, so please appoint this board in the interim for a period of 6 months. The president appointed the interim, then after some time, you come back and say, Mr. President, the 6 months is gone, now we started a new process, we are giving you now 12 names. People are going to ask, can the real SADC board please tell us, because they are worried. The president appointing this interim, this and that and that. Now, we thought it would be appropriate, Ms. Patton, to recommend that we remove the interim process from the president. If it is unconstitutional, then we can keep both the president and the speaker to do that. You see, so that you don't take, then because the issue of separation of powers, what is it called, doctrine, in which you must be careful when you do that. So that you don't take the power of the president and give it to the speaker, we found following due process and the necessary steps. So that's the proposal. Proposal number one, we would have preferred, and I'm saying this is a debate that we are having, that the speaker should actually appoint, or we should appoint the interim board. The second option, the National Assembly as should be. But because of this area of the separation of powers, we propose that both, it must go together, because once we have the power for appointing or for removal, it also goes, it implies the issue of the appointing. Hence, Section 13 and 15 go together. You see, you can't make Mr. Mena to appoint today, then tomorrow he doesn't have the power to appoint, then you bring back to the floor. Those are issues we are trying to address, so that there are no problems, Chair. But we would also expect the State Law Advisor to give us their opinion on the matter.
Mr. Hellman,
you seemed to indicate a minute ago that I had expressed myself favorably towards the idea of the speaker having a role. I did not. I thought I made it quite clear. She is a titular and neutral figure. The National Assembly is the body that has power to act as the legislative authority. So if it's just clear, what I did say is I would support the idea of the board itself choosing its chair and its deputy. I certainly do not support any role for the speaker, and I doubt that South Korea's constitution is the same as ours.
Okay, you want to come in now, Mr.
Kulwani? It's only one thing. I don't think two, three should be viewed in the light which Ms. Matt indicated, that it like to put something or holding an X for people. Because that's why I said, in order to deal with that, and Mr. Kumala also said that we might need to highlight under which circumstances which can lead to a board to be dissolved. As indicated that you see, not to declare your interest might not be the collective, all the board members have not declared. So it might not be possible to dissolve a board under that circumstance. So we've been saying we want to separate or to find something. We should be explicit in terms of when that can happen under which circumstances. But I'm saying it's not a bad thing. I'm sure throughout the world they are saying our constitution is the best. But that prescribes that when can the National Assembly remove the president? That is not to put an X to the head of the president and so on. It's just that when those circumstances happen, then you can act in this manner. And so I don't think it's that bad as is being indicated and so on. It's just that we are trying to cover all the eventualities. So we must look that into that light, why you are not. But surely, we will take the point that as the issues listed on 2A also might not be the one which is covering everything. So we need to separate so that it's clear when that can happen. So we're looking into that.
Mr. Helmut, no relative of
It's of course dangerous to give advice off the cuff, so but I'll try my best. Yes, as far as our country is concerned, I've dealt with a number of acts. I'm not aware of any act that has this procedure where a speaker plays such a role. I am a bit concerned, but I will look into the matter more carefully. That we might have a separation of powers issue. There's a reason why we have separation. One of it is that different checks and balances between the executive and the legislative and the judiciary. Another point is that government must be done by the executive. If the speaker plays this role, to a certain extent, the speaker is playing governance role, and then the issue becomes confused. But on the other hand, I've just looked in the Constitution, it's just by way of analogy, section 174(3), the President is head of the National Executive Office of something, the Judicial Service Commission, and the leaders of parties represented in the NA appoint the Chief Justice. So in the Constitution, there's an example of the role that political leaders play, but it's only after consultation, and the final decision is the president. There probably won't be any problem if the MA takes the decision regarding the short list and the president. Then ask the speaker's advice, but only as advice. In other words, the speaker, the president may decide not to follow that advice. So the final decision rests with the president. But I'm as I've started off, it is just dangerous to give such advice off the cuff. But I'll look into it more carefully.
You are saying that it is acceptable, or it might not be constitutional. It might be constitutional if the president, after consultation with the speaker, and the difference is if you say in consultation, then you're having a problem. Am I right? Just clarify that in
yes.
And after for me,
again, I want to put the caveat. I have to look at it, and there might be constitutional case law on this matter, so I'll look into it. But my feeling is that if the president only has to ask the advice of the speaker, that there won't be a problem because the speaker isn't bound by that advice. Eventually, it is an executive act, in other words.
Thank you. Ms. Engeni?
The comment is the perhaps a good for us if we can get an advice that says what we are doing of is unconstitutional. Because as the gentleman who has spoken said, the president is consulting with the speaker before appointing the judicial officer. So that consultation is there. We have taken into account what you are saying, that what if the president doesn't agree? But also, what if the president does not agree with what the parliament has proposed? Now the question that if the president does not agree with what has been proposed by the speaker and does not agree also with what the parliament has proposed, what else? So in what we are thinking, we are saying that the president must consult with the speaker. And if both of them don't agree, then we are saying the National Assembly must take a final decision. because it would be dangerous to leave the decision to one individual or to two individuals. So if they don't agree, the last hope will be the final, will be the National Assembly. This is danger that we have now. You see, this law or the act has been, we don't know what, why was it not preempted, or our predecessors did not preempt that these questions that we're discussing today might arise, and when they arise, what then? So what we're trying to do, we don't want to do a half job and leave the other questions to other people to answer. What we're trying to do is to answer all the questions, even the impossible questions. You see, so that we find a way of dealing with this once and for all.
Is the fog clearing up? It's clearing, yes. The attitude, we're getting somewhere, I think it's getting clearer.
It's on the red headlights now.
No, I've got one problem, sir, and that's my personal problem. You scheduled this meeting long ago for 10 o'clock this morning. I had a meeting last night, I've got a meeting tonight. I left this morning at 4 o'clock in Gauteng to be here by 10, and I'm leaving again within a few minutes now. And I won't be here tomorrow. But it's a very serious issue, this. I would have liked to be here. So I'm not sure how much I would give my input. If I may, they add one or two things, and then you must excuse me. And really, I will be here from 10 o'clock around 4 for the meeting.
Yeah,
I postponed it, if you don't mind. Number one, it's on a few reactions. As leader of a political party, I'm being consulted by the president. But he's ignored me as well, more than once. Yes, he did. He made a mistake, I know, but he only discovered it later. So I think that's the process as being at the moment, a sort of a consultation process, but there's no way that it could have been to him. Now, on the whole question and a few reactions, I can understand surely that we need some proposals out to remove a single member. And surely the 300 plus would support some reasonable way to get rid of a member that's not doing its job and all those things. I don't want you to debate it again. And that will be here tomorrow if you start voting. I just want to get my position clear on that. Now, when you say the whole board, there's no way I can understand that. Why the whole board must be removed, and therefore I don't see the need of an interim board. I know he's struggling at the moment how to appoint the interim board. If the board is gone, appoint a new board. I can think of only one reason the board is gone. That might be an air crash. We were all together and something happened.
On the way to Beijing,
I thought so. And I made a press statement, why are they going to Beijing? I haven't seen them on TV and they're not technical behind the scenes and so on. That's the scenario. And then it's a procedure and you appoint a new board in that situation. Because I cannot be convinced that you need to get rid of the whole board and that it's not political sword over the heads or intimidation. I get the argument that the president is also can be removed by parliament. But I don't think that's a comparison. He's a political guy in the middle of a fight. This is more chapter 9 type of thinking. And therefore I can't see the comparison using that argument. Now, how do you get into the board? I don't think that's necessary anymore. On the resignation procedure, I first thought it's not necessary to have a procedure because normally you can resign. Nobody can keep you there. But maybe the argument, and I can go with that, I think Eric said that, to give some time limits, for example, they need the 3 months and to be reasonable towards the rest of the board, to be reasonable towards this body. That's the point. And surely we can support that, that there's some procedure to make it more fair for a new guy to take over. And then I think also the whole idea of the board appointing a chairperson, I think that can go. It sounds good and it sounds healthy. And I've got experience in the past where we appointed people that was not the national leader or whatever, and you cause a lot of problems for the group working in internal dynamics. So surely we can support that. But I hope I put my position clear. And if you don't mind, sir, I plan to be back after the election and to get on with these fights But to do that, I must go to the meeting tonight to get the money for posters and to fight the ANC. So you must.
Tomorrow, please send me a note how much money you've collected. So
I'll do that, sir. You'll see the posters where there's a lot of only a few, but I'm unlikely in need of a party.
You've got a crazy poster, you failed.
Yes, exactly.
If you were a glossy poster like the DA's, I think you've got a lot of money. Thank you, Dr. Miller. Mr. Kolwani and Mr. Peterson. Scott?
Somebody is pressing. I can't promise you that this board will not be dissolved tomorrow, next year, or any month. Anything is possible. The reason I'm saying this is because you realize that the Land Bank Board has been dissolved almost 3 to 4 times. Recently, there's just been other things. Two, the Civil Aviation Authority Board at some point in time was dissolved because of all sorts of problems. The NEL also has problems like that. FAA boards do get dissolved. It's nothing new. It does happen. And it happens for all sorts of reasons. Now, Chair, we do a law like this to make sure that in an eventuality of a board doing all the things that you said are stated there. Instead of, if they don't do their fiduciary duties, they don't get their fiduciary duties and all sorts of things, and they engage into a corporation losing almost millions and millions of money, you can't just keep them there collectively. And this is strange, Dr. Miller, because Ms. Smart says we must do the collective evaluation, but she doesn't agree with the collective dissolution. It doesn't make sense. But as that's what I should address. But yeah, I must say, the issue of removal, we do take your points, and we're quite happy that you agree with the section that deals with the removal of a member of members, as agreed also the issue of the resignation. I'm sure the issue of the interim process, the board, that's the one that we think is a bit tricky. We must just get through legal advice and get it sorted out. But otherwise, we're happy with the support, and we must just promise you that whichever area you are going to, it could only be that you retain your vote, but in the ANC stronghold, we won't succeed. Thank you.
I won't actually say that. Thank you for that in any way. And on the removal, I just want to warn, and that's my last word. I try to get rid of some members of parliament of my party, and it's very difficult. You go to court all the way, so just be sure that same will happen. Yeah, that's also there.
Absolutely.
Mr. Peterson? There's a certain reality. You can imagine. With all these things happening, you could have mass resignation from the board. All of them going. Now, when you want to, we've gone through the process to get a new board. Takes so much time. Takes so much time. You have to speak in these informers. You need to advertise. You need to all of that. The question is, what do you do in that interim? Who runs? Who governs? Who takes decisions? So that period. Now, if you can fill the vacuum by the absence of a board within a week or two, or within a month even, then I would reckon you might not need the interim board. But we know from past experience and current experience, to find the right people to find the board won't happen overnight. So it's about that. And I'm sure in distant future, things might be able to happen much quicker that you might not need the interim board. But currently you would need one. Now it would be unfair to try and stipulate all the reasons. I don't think this committee or parliament is crazy and wants to come up with preset ideas how you want to resolve a board. Even now when a person wants to resign, and Mr. Kumala has alerted to it, if the person can hand in his resignation now, I don't want to manage that process. Or more than one person wants to do that, wants to resign. How do you manage that process that will also give you space to be able to prepare and fill that position timely? It's about all these things that we're making that kind of proposal to us. But I'm sure tomorrow morning we'll have to come with a practical proposal to say this is how we want to resolve that.
Yeah, Ms. Foster, take this to the last speaker and then we can...
Chair, I don't know whether I heard Randy Peterson correctly. Do I understand that the ANC doesn't want to give reasons why the board should be dissolved. That it just can be. But so that's I'd like really to get very clear understanding, because that moves us on to the whole issue of due inquiry. And I know I need to get back to my caucus on this, but certainly our National Council has discussed the issue. And right now, I mean, the whole idea of politically engineering the collapse of the entire SABC board and then politically engineering an interim board is just simply unacceptable, because the SABC is not the land bank. It's not Danel. It's not the aviation authority. I mean, it has a very specific public function in the public life of this country. Not that the others don't, but in terms of the information and how people receive news and information and form their opinions on a daily basis, it plays a critical role. So I would like to clearly we're going to see what the ANC are going to put in writing for us tomorrow. But I'm not convinced listening to the argument. And I obviously will have to go back to my party, but I'm certainly not convinced that these are valid in terms of the current law. And I just await to see what you put down.
I'm taking in 15 weeks now, yeah? Because I still see you've got something on 16 and you've got something on 14, which I want you to talk to just now.
No, but the thing I wanted, because in fact Mr. Kumalo did stop me earlier there with one last thing I wanted to say, but I think it is relevant and I hope you to this discussion now. See, I would argue that you don't need any such thing as an interim board. I still argue that the idea of the dissolution of the board is offensive and intimidatory. But you don't need these devices, because once you have a proper procedure whereby Parliament itself can trigger inquiry into what we may believe, but would first have to establish some sort of upfront case of grounds for the removal of a member. Once you remove a member or members, what you happen is once you have vacancies, you fill the vacancies. That is the normal way. If on your argument there should be a considerable number of board members who after due inquiry, please note, lose their jobs, then what you do is you fill the vacancies by using the existing appointment procedure. But I think that this idea of the dissolution is a purge. I have said so repeatedly. I think that the idea of the interim board is something being proposed for political reasons. I remain of the view that they must be simply deleted, but I say to you, you don't need such provisions. If you are bona fide trying to address any difficulties there may be in the SABC board, you don't need such provisions. If anybody has done anything wrong, misconducted themselves, can't do their job, and I haven't heard a single persuasive argument that any such member has done such a thing, then you institute proceedings, you go through due inquiry. If there's a vacancy, you fill it in the normal way. These measures are not necessary. And the reasons why they are before us are not in good faith. So,
are you responding to this?
I want to ask Mr. Smudler, let's take your argument further. The people are being, things are being followed up on individual basis. You know, board members, challenges arrange them on an individual basis. Not the whole board, on an individual basis, but collectively. And found guilty, they bring you under the threshold of a quorum of the board. Remember, you don't do it as everybody, on the individual basis, and you bring them under the threshold. How does that board operate if you have, if you don't have the space to appoint the short term to make sure that they have a quorum, to make sure they'll be able to operate, it gives you the space to do it effectively. You're under now the threshold of a quorum.
Kulwani.
You see, we are trying to do this thing as painful as possible and inclusive as possible. But you see, if in the minds of people they are preoccupied about paging and other reasons, with some of us we don't see, it will be a problem. Because here we are trying to deal with the legislation, which will try to ensure that it covers even any situation which might arise and so on. So as much as there is an indication that people they have not yet hear any persuasive argument, I didn't hear one either. You see, when we started this process, I have consistently raised and asked a question about unconstitutionality of some of these things. No one came out conclusive and said this is unconstitutional and so on. But we passed that. The point which we are raising is that if we have this situation which we are talking about, what must we do? We are trying to provide an answer or a solution. So we'll appreciate if the contribution was responding to that. It's a shortcut to say it will never happen. I think that is a shortcut way of dealing with things. The issue that when it happens, what do you do? And you cannot continue saying use the normal process. We know the process. Some of the members have been here when some of us were still 5 years or so, I suppose. They've been interviewing these people for many times. They know the difficulties about their processes and so on. Now, it's become practically impossible to think that if there is a vacuum, you can allow the normal process to unfold until you appoint people. That's not the reality. We know what is happening in terms of that process and so on. So I say, one will prefer a situation when we talk about that situation on how do we respond. We are given alternatives. Not the shortcut share of saying it will never happen and so on. A board has been dissolved, although the SAPC is seen as a board of a special type fund. But the board has been dissolved and so on and so on. So I think this thing of paging and political engineering and so on and so on, I do not know where does it come from. Surely, from our submission, even the memo submitted to National Assembly, we never raised that as a reason. If you read the memo, there are reasons why we wanted to engage on this process. And we didn't say we want to political engineer or to page people and so on. I don't know where does it come from. But if people, they want us to engage on such debate, we can. But for now, we are dealing with the legislation, trying to find out what people can assist us to reach a final conclusion on this matter. We'll engage on the other political issues of paging and so on at the right time, but for now, let us focus to our work. And we are not going to allow anyone to detect us or to distract us from what we are looking at. We are looking to finalize this amendment, and we will finalize this amendment. So it would be better if people would start to assist us. I take the point which is indicating that in where to see the wedding and so on, what exactly is there. I think that is better. It's not that destructive. It's a fair way of dealing with things, which we should be dealing with things. So say people can say whatever they want to say about that, but our eye is on the ball. We are no longer pushing anything down the throat of people. Now our eyes on the board, we are playing the ball and so on. I think that will take us forward, hopefully tomorrow when we got the draft.
Chuck,
so.
There are no pages, no political interference, no political engineering. This is a process of hardworking, poor, underpaid parliamentarians who are working day and night to make sure that institutions that account to this institution account properly and they are able to execute their duties in a way that it will benefit the entire country, in particular to carry the mandate of the public broadcaster, to educate, to entertain, and to to inform. Now, those are the major important things that we are there to, and we want to see a working broadcasting corporation. And this board must also be able to carry its duties properly. Chairperson, the condition for removal of the members also applies as it relates to dissolution. We are saying there are conditions that we put there for dissolution, but we think that we might have to add more, because we might as well come where we have expected that opposition parties might also make their own contribution in a situation that we might have to, at some point, dissolve the SABC board. Now, it's a pity that they are looking at it much more from their own ways, and it looks like they've also made their own political conclusions on the matter now. That then says, Chair, there is no more to discuss except to submit, to make our submissions tomorrow, the draft, and from then on, after that, we finish the deliberation. It shouldn't take us an hour tomorrow. We polish up, we make the proposal, they've already made their views. From then on, we finish the process. After finishing the process, you submit the report to the speaker, they get a date for the debate in the National Assembly, we debate it next week or another week, we finish it, we vote, we give it to the president signs, from there we do our work. That's how we do it. Thanks, sir.
It's the whole issue of due inquiry. I mean, I've gone through the powers and privileges of Parliament and so on and so forth. I see, you know, what you're looking at here, but I just don't see how this would relate to getting rid of an entire board. I just need the law advisors or somebody to help me in terms of the powers and privileges of Parliament and the few little misconduct in mystery meetings, you know, haven't got an interest, disqualified. I mean, I just cannot see how this is going to due inquiry. So I don't see how you're going to do it in terms of an entire board. And under what here? I mean, just explain to me how, what you're going to use, and if you're going to use the powers and privileges of Parliament, etc., exactly how you're going to do it.
Excuse me, I'm the person who mentioned the powers and privileges.
Sir, we'll table it tomorrow. Will tomorrow be ready, sir? Don't worry, we'll table it tomorrow.
All right. Now, when we come to the timing of that, can we move now off this one? I just want to speak, I want Ms. Musk to talk to 14 and 16. She's got two other proposals here. Let's just understand what she's saying.
Briefly, my proposal under 14.1 follows the proposal of the civil society coalition. They have a differently drafted and differently placed proposal. But all it's doing is to bring back what used to be in the Broadcasting Act of 1999, under Section 14 thereof. That used to say, quite simply, that the non-executive members of the board appoint the CEO, the CFO, and the CEO, as in any other company. The non-executive members of the board appoint the three top executives, that's what it says, and then I've added a provision for the other 11, or for the other executive members. It's a gigantic executive committee, by the way. I think we should let it back to six as the original. I don't know why the executive committee is so vast, but I've provided that the other members of the executive committee are appointed by the CEO in consultation with the board. And I think that is just the way things run, and that ought to be put back into the law. And the last one, again, I picked up some of their proposals. We discussed these in some length the other day, so perhaps we don't need to discuss them now. Simply for the disqualification provision, I just added that politicians ought not to be eligible for appointment to the board, and that I think stands to reason. I said that the members of parliament, any provincial legislature, or any municipal council ought not to be eligible. Neither should office bearers or employees of any party. I've used formulation registered with the IEC, but you can do it in other ways. I just don't think politicians ought to be appointed to the SABC board, not ones holding actual office.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? All right, can I get, are you speaking to this issue? This proposal, the command?
No, sir, we had made our opinion quite clear. we said that we would want to stick to the original text of the Act as it is and don't include that. Because unfortunately on this one we can't even go deeper to discuss, because you see our focus check as the ANC will go around section 15. We did touch 13 because it's got implications for 15, but on this one we thought we should leave the Act as it is. We did also check the Save Our SADC coalition recommendation, but having discussed and checked, we thought we should leave the Act as it is. Thank you.
You were Anna?
Agreed.
Thank you very much. All right. Can I have a proposal then for tomorrow's meeting time and the particular arrangement?
We can even start at 6. 9 is too late for us. We are ready at 3 o'clock. We want to finalize.
It's a good time to start. The media won't be here. No journalist is working at 6 o'clock. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a problem in that I've been up to a meeting with the speaker at 12. And so I can see that this is not going to be just a quick 2-hour meeting. And if we often don't start it on time, so I'm just saying now that I have agreed, obviously, to attend the meeting that the speaker wishes to have tomorrow with certain members of the Pan African Parliament.
So I have indicated to you that I was supposed to join the public hearings at Upington of the Safety and Security and Justice, and I would have really, this is an inconvenience, but I must also apologize, Chair, to the members for an inconvenience and also to the people who normally come in, because they might have not arranged. They thought today to be over. I would suggest, Chair, that we start at 9, by 10:30, then we are finished. Tomorrow, it shouldn't take long. If you start at 9, it should be finished. An hour to 2 hours should be enough. If you go straight to the right issue, we're not going to debate that.
We will have carefully considered written up proposals. Yeah. We consider them briefly and then we vote on them, yes or no. Is that what we're talking about tomorrow?
Yeah. No pending.
No debate and discussion. We've planned
the
discussion.
No pending, no political engineering. That's the proposition of the amendment.
Want to properly apply our minds. And so you will have your draft, but which we will obviously have to look at very closely. Is there any chance that we could get it by 6 o'clock tomorrow morning on our emails?
No, by the time
we get here, that we, you know, because if we get day nova things dropped on the desk at 9, and we're trying to then go back to the original act and start looking at it, it's not really fair. It's not fair on you either, for us to properly understand exactly the implications.
Consider it done. We can even help deliver it at 12.
He just wants to visit you at 12 tonight.
But is a fair request. The fair request, they should give it to them as early as possible. Tomorrow it would have been preferable tonight, but I'm sure tonight they must still be working on the matter, but they will definitely get it. If we can email it to them, Chairperson. We will definitely do that. It's a fair request.
Right. So the ANC will email the proposal to them sometime tonight. Alright, and then you, Rita? The committee secretary will have to organize the venue. They'll send an SMS out. Provisionally, it's S26. Provisionally, we're subject to confirmation day because there are too many rooms that are being booked out. Alright, and I think we can leave it till tomorrow. Thank you very much, and let's hope that the opposition parties get us very early tonight so they can really get into it. Thank you, then. Bye.